Hi guys, welcome to episode 21 of Small Talk What's It, the podcast. I am here with Tina Marie Clark, and I'm super excited. She is a mother of two, she's a model, she is the author and creator of the Shiftster Method, and I'm so excited to have her here today. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. We're here on a beautiful Saturday in her gorgeous home. So what's the inspiration, before we get into the podcast, like what was the inspiration of your home? Because it's very like chic, but eclectic. And so.
Very eclectic.
Yeah.
So the inspiration, thank you so much, by the way.
Yeah.
I love my home. One of the main points when I moved in here, I got the most powerful piece of advice. And I think I could take this piece of advice in any area of my life.
Yeah.
But it was from my stylist girlfriend, Bernadette. And she said that you should love every single piece of furniture down to your staple gun in your home. Mm. You should love every single piece.
Right.
Because when you're coming home, you should have everything around you that brings you joy or makes you happy. So I took that so literally, every single thing. There was nothing in this apartment, and I did it piece by piece.
Truly.
If I don't like the way a cup, like I didn't like my old mugs, mm-hmm. got rid of them. Even if I had two mugs on the counter, I still loved every single piece.
And so. I might sound super LA right now, but I feel like there is definitely like an energy when you pick pieces that reflect not only who you are, but yes. even in the home, it sets off a certain vibe.
And it is.
Yeah.
It is definitely my vibe. And you get my personality, and I love that.
Well, you seem to have a dope personality.
Thank
if like
you.
This is a reflection
oh,
of like anything.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. So even like when I was like doing my research about you, you kind of have like an incredible story. It's truly like an incredible story, and I'm excited to talk about it. So before we like get into it, let's just talk about you. So like, where did you grow up, and like, what's your background?
So my background is I grew up in Section 8 housing mm-hmm. in Philadelphia, which is government-assisted housing
yeah.
with my mom, a fiercely independent single mother, with my two yeah. younger brothers. And we grew up pretty much always knowing that we were poor and that mm-hmm. we had grown up in a less than mentality, mm-hmm. I would say. I from 6th to 12th grade, I basically got expelled from every school that I ever was in. So was eventually placed at my last school mm-hmm. and really thrived there and was able to graduate. But had I not gone to a school like that, I would not have graduated.
It's really interesting. So growing up, when you say you knew you were poor, there was a lot of comparison? Like you saw what it was like to have?
Exactly.
Okay.
So my community, like everyone had new cars or they had like a minivan. I thought a minivan was like a Rolls Royce.
Wow.
Like a proper minivan. I thought that that was like the end all be all. So the idea of just having a 20-year-old car was exciting to my mom
right.
and us. So yeah, we always knew. We always had that shame. It was always in our face.
Mm-hmm.
It was either implied through other people's actions or it was just something we noticed.
Yeah, and you said you got expelled.
Yes.
Okay, so what was bringing that anger inside of you, or like this kind of, you know, you wanted to like lash out on the world, I guess?
Yes. Shame and anger.
Mm.
I was hurting and
yeah.
I didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Did you understand why at that age, why you were ashamed or?
I had no idea what was going on.
Okay.
It took so long for me to even figure out mm. or even get a glimpse of what was actually going on. All I knew was I was throwing chairs. All I knew was you pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I knew. I didn't go any deeper into trying to figure it out. I just
yeah.
tried to manage whatever upheaval I was having.
So this continued all the way into your teen years?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And would you say as late as 20s, like your early 20s, or?
I still feel like I have moments of that
mm.
today.
Yeah.
There's moments where those things, those emotions come up and I have different coping skills to deal with that. But
right.
that never really goes away.
Totally. So this obviously is going to lead us down to how you created the Shiftster Method, but what kind of inside of you was like something needs to change?
So when I was 15, I got the opportunity to become a model.
Okay.
And that
you were scouted?
No, I, like, my mom took pictures, black and white pictures of me, okay, and sent them into an agency.
I love that, the hustle, yeah.
Yes. So I eventually landed a modeling contract with a design, or a agency in Philadelphia, and I went to my first job, and when I went to my first job, my sassy attitude almost got me, like, it almost derailed my,
really,
my whole career, because I could not afford to be the way that I was if I was going to have the career that I wanted.
And you got a wake up call, like, really quick, this industry, no, we don't.
It was the first time. I remember getting the call the next morning.
Right.
And I thought it was going to be my agency telling me how great I did, because that's how unaware I was of my behavior and how bad it was. Wow. I thought they were going to be like, you killed it last night. Like, yeah, great job on the runway. And no, it was my agent. Her name was Agnes Green. And she basically said, you know, your attitude is not in vogue and you cannot do that.
Wow.
And I was petrified, because my dream of becoming a model was from, I want to say, infancy. Mm. I always knew I was going to be a model. I always knew I wanted to be. And my grandmother even says, I walked out of the womb a model.
Yeah.
I knew that. That was how I operated. That's who I was. Mm-hmm. I was a baby wanting to change.
You kind of look a little like Megan Fox to me, by the way.
Oh.
Have you ever gotten that?
No.
Oh.
Take it.
Yeah. Yes. It. Yeah. No, continue. But.
So I always wanted that. So the idea of that being derailed by my attitude was not happening. So yeah. I really had to do deep work and figure out what was going on so I could keep that from not happening.
Yeah. No one ever told you that at a young age, like, this behavior is, like, not okay. You had to wait till later, or it never registered with you. Like, that was a wake up call when you were actually in the real world and you're like, okay, wait, this is, like, not okay.
I knew that it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything that was, the consequences weren't painful enough for me to have the wake-up call.
Okay.
My dream not happening was so painful. The idea of that was the thing that was the catalyst to make me change.
That makes sense.
Everything else, I didn't care. It was like, oh, you're gonna be mad at me, or oh, you're gonna kick me out of school, or oh, you're not gonna let me do this. I didn't care.
Yeah.
This was the one thing that I really cared about.
That's interesting. So now let's talk about, how did Shift Stir Method come about?
So the Shift Stir Method came about, it actually did not come about per se.
Mm.
It was unmethodized for years. It was just my way of being.
Yeah.
There was no Shift Stir Method. This was just how I coped.
Yeah.
When things would come up, when I would get triggered, and I call triggers being stirred.
Yeah.
When you're in the eye of the stir.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go through that, I had to do a process to get myself out of it so I could get out of my own way.
Right.
So that became a method once I started figuring out, like, hey, this is transformative. Let me share this with other people.
For sure.
Because if I could do it, and if I could apply these principles that were simple yet difficult,
yeah,
then other people could too. And the idea of one girl or one person being able to reduce that anxiety,
mm-hmm,
of what happens when you're in the middle of that storm,
mm,
of chaos, of negative thought patterns that are swirling around inside your mind. Mm-hmm. If I could reduce that for a second, I would, like, give an arm to do. I would have given an arm to do that for myself.
Right, because it's easy. And it's because it's easy to give advice when you're not actually in the storm or in the stir itself.
Yeah.
But it's hard when you're actually in it. Like, what do I do? And I can only imagine the kind of feelings you were dealing with. But so it sounds like if this was your lifestyle, you just put a name on it. And so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would have never thought that it was a method, but when I started thinking about it, it really came down in a formula.
Yeah.
It was like a second download. I was,
right,
aligning myself. I had been working on how I could...
Were you talking to someone?
Yes. Okay. I was working with a woman named Jeannie Grabowski. She's an incredible, incredible coach and business developer. And I was like asking her, I want to show up in this world. I know I'm super excited about these things.
Yeah.
I love talking about courage. I love vulnerability. I love sharing with women about what we don't like to talk about.
Totally.
in, there's a section in the book called Own Your Awful. Mm. The parts of you that you'd rather keep hidden, how can you show up and share with other women to liberate them and allow them to feel a little more human themselves?
Like your vulnerability yes. is your strength.
Exactly.
For sure.
And connecting with women and being like, hey, I see you, I feel you, I've been there.
Yeah.
And it may not be the same exact story, but it's the same feeling.
But there's a same like streamline through it.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
It's fear and suffering. So
yeah.
When you own your awful, you have that connection with other people. So I was working with Jeannie Grabowski to flush that out. And I worked with her about a year and a half, and got nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
So I thought. Because it was at one moment I felt like I was making no progress, and then it came and it just showed up. It was one day, there was an instant, I woke up and it was like, oh, you're a shifter.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even know what that was. Oh, the next day it was like, oh, you actually have the shifter method.
Yeah.
Here are the five principles. So it came down, and the idea of doing the work every day, even when you're not producing something,
right,
but you're going after it.
Yeah.
With Jeannie and I loved uncovering it. That's why I kept doing it a year and a half. There had to have been some reward. It was because I was doing that deep inquiry and really fleshing out what it was, how and why and what I came here to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when the method came, it had already been underpinned by all that year and a half of work, and it just fit. It was like a lock and a key.
Yeah.
So had I not done that work, it was like I needed to have every single day up until that point to be able to even receive the method and then have the courage to birth it.
Absolutely. I love that. It's kind of incredible. But so your lifestyle, it wasn't just this one day you woke up and it changed. I mean, this was a day in, day out battle.
Oh, yeah. I still do it.
Yeah.
I still have to use my method. Whenever I'm off, I'm like, okay, like turn back to what you know to be true.
So when you started to implement this into your life in a real way, what kind of changes and results did you see come after that?
Just transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Painful transformation.
Yeah.
Because of most of the method is asking you to be honest with yourself and take responsibility for your stirs.
Mm.
And what is the narrative that your mind and your ego is creating that creates the suffering within you?
Yeah.
And it is detaching from the blame game. You made me do this. You make me feel. I would say those things all the time, and I would believe them with every ounce of my being.
Yeah.
And I would call my mom and I would like lay out my evidence of who wronged me.
Yeah.
And she would always come back to me with this one statement. And it was such a liberating statement and an infuriating statement all at the same time. She said, I know you think this is about X, but this is about you.
Mm.
And I would be just like so mad at that, because I'm like, what do you mean it's about me? Because
right.
X, Y, and Z, like this is what they did and this is what they said. And she's like, I know and I hear you and I feel for you on how you feel, but there's something that's going on inside of you that is resonating with this, and that's why it's painful.
Yeah.
So that started me on that inquiry to look deeper. What is it that when someone rolls their eyes at me, I tell myself about me that causes the suffering, the pain?
Yeah.
And when I get clear and tapped into that narrative, that's where I see the source of the pain. It's not the eye roll, it's my interpretation of the eye roll that causes the pain.
Right.
And the method just uncovers that.
Right.
And once I started getting honest about that, that gave me the opportunity to reinterpret and transform my relationships for the better, because I wouldn't go off in the blame game.
Right.
I had a worn, you know, I had a path of people that I sabotaged relationships with. Mm-hmm. I had people that I hurt because I was, you know, in a stir and I would lash out.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to repair those and being honest with people about what was actually going on
right.
was so cool.
Yeah, amazing. It's also kind of amazing to see how, like, because it's hard for me to even imagine that you were once a person that even, like, was capable of acting that way because of who you are now.
Oh, she's right under the surface.
No, it's amazing. But also what you said about the eye roll thing, I think, like, just also there are situations where maybe someone is doing it to intentionally try to hurt you, mm-hmm. but it's also not worth it sometimes because you're also remembering that there are close people in your life that do love you and realizing it's you don't have to pick every single battle, you know?
Exactly.
Some of it, it's just not worth it, for sure. So just, if you could put it in a sentence, I know we talked about it, like, okay, just now, but, like, the STIR, what is it, if you could break it down, just, like, one or two sentences?
The method?
Yeah.
So it's a 5-step method to shift your perception from going from a STIR, which is a deviation into a negative thought pattern, mm-hmm. into a shift that is more aligned with what you really want in your life.
And then the 5 steps, you said it's STIR?
So STIR, yeah. Sit, sift, share, and shift.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. I think people can also find on your website if they want to implement this themselves. So when did you know, like, this is something I want to do, is, like, I want to not only, like, incorporate it into your life and kind of pursue it in somewhat of a career?
I would say I've had a yearning for that probably about 5 years.
Yeah.
My son's 3 and a half. And it started, you know, these little tiny whispers of you are not doing what you came here to do mm-hmm. anymore, because what I originally came here to do was model. Mm-hmm. And I only thought that was my job. That's who I was. I was so identified with it. And then I started getting, like, these little nudges and whispers, and the things that, like, lit me up the most, that it energized me the most, were completely outside of my job.
Yeah.
And they were, like, talking to random people on the subway about,
I love that,
life, about, or, you know, connecting with girlfriends about what is really going on.
Mm.
So those things lit me up way more than my modeling career. So I started hearing the whispers of, this is not where you need to be.
Yeah.
And this is calling you. So I started listening to it, going to, I'm like a class junkie.
Yeah.
Not fitness classes, but anything that is gonna reveal or uncover or tap into what is going on, so I can deeper understand myself and mm-hmm. humanity at large. I wanna know people, and I wanna know why and how things work.
For sure. And I think also living in a city like Manhattan, you know, I think it could be very easy to get caught up in, like, the superficialness of all of it. And so I think having those real conversations and connecting with people, it's so important for, like, our souls and as human beings. And so
absolutely,
I think it's really important to do that. And like you said, I love talking to, like, even if you're on an elevator and you have, like, a random 5-minute conversation with someone, it's moments like that where I think you gain clarity about yourself sometimes.
Absolutely. I call those moments magic in the mundane.
Yeah.
It's a mundane moment that has these seeds that can lodge into your way of being in your day-to-day life, where you're like, I have this little clip of information that I can store inside me and take with me. And
yeah,
it's magic. And I love that.
Amazing. And then I guess, like, what's one piece of advice you can give for just, you know, how do you take time for yourself? Like, if you want to relax and just, you need Tina Marie time, like, what do you do?
So for me, I am... this is kind of naughty, but once my kids go down uh-huh. at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and my husband's away a lot of the time, I will literally sit in bed with food, and I call it a feeding blanket.
Mm.
It is a huge blanket that's on my bed that is just probably, like, picking up debris that is dropping for me eating inside my bed.
Oh my
God.
So I
don't have crumbs in my bed.
That's incredible.
So I eat my, like, takeout, I watch my Netflix, I listen to my audiobooks, and I just hang with myself. And yeah, I know that somebody else would...
No, I love that.
I know that somebody else is like... you know, I feel so grounded when I'm with the ocean, or I feel grounded when I'm at the top of a mountain feeling the earth beneath me. And I know unequivocally I am feeling the same way when I am in my bed watching Dateline with French fries.
Amazing.
It's the same feeling.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah,
the frequency that we're all looking for. Mine just shows up watching Dateline.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. What's your go-to takeout place? Where do you love ordering from?
I actually love, this is crazy that they do this, but Tao Downtown actually does takeout.
Do they?
Yes, and it's so good. It's so good.
Oh my God, I didn't know this. Wait, what's your order?
The chicken dumplings, and then I do a yellowtail jalapeno roll.
I did not know they delivered.
Yes.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, so motherhood, your life has completely changed. You have, two sons.
Two sons.
What are their names?
Maximus and Lexington.
Love those names.
Thank you.
It's good. You chose them yourself, or did you have, little recommendations?
No, so I wanted Maximus to be Lex, because I love the name Lex.
Uh-huh.
But we both, David and I both liked Max. And when we first met, we always said our first kids would be named Max.
Yeah.
And we were just friends, and it was random, and we're like, no, that's my baby name. And he's like, no, that's my baby name.
Yeah.
So we knew it was Max, but I really always loved the name Lex. So with our second, I got the chance to name him Lex.
That's amazing. So how has your life changed, going from this single life to now being a mother of two?
It has changed fundamentally for the best. And I'm not just saying that to be one of those moms that's oh, it's so great.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there is just something that has happened inside of me that is the grand sifter of everything. Who you spend your time with, what's coming into your body, what's going into your mind, how your time is allocated, is just sifted by your love for your child.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the reason why I wanted to do the method and really dedicate myself to writing the book and making it clear and doing it as well as I think I've done is because I wanted my boys to know that their mom dared. This scared the crap out of me. I did not want to do the work because I was scared.
Yeah.
I've never written a book. I've never... me owning the fact that I have a method, I can now do it. But when that first came down from the portals, I was like, wait, what? I'm gonna have a method? It was just so hard for me to even own. But if I want my kids to do one thing, if I could leave them with one thing, it is to be brave and to really own who you are. And who I am is someone that came here to deliver this and to do this.
Yes.
I know that this is my job because there is no one more passionate and knows this content as well as my heart and me. I know this through and through.
It's so amazing too to see how over your life, when you were younger, you thought your purpose is, I'm meant to be a model. That's my life's purpose. And now you're in a stage where it's and when maybe as you were in your 20s, you're okay, I'm gonna do this method is my purpose. But now you're taking that and also now it's also for your children. Yes. And so it's crazy to see and I'm sure over time as you evolve, it's gonna change even more and more. But it's incredible to see how much things have changed, honestly, for the better, like you said. So let's talk about you and your man. How did you meet? How did that happen?
So we met in the Hamptons.
Okay.
And I had never been to the Hamptons.
Yeah.
And in my mind, it was the only time I saw or heard about the Hamptons was Ali Hilfiger had this really cool show before any reality TV show, and it was called Rich Girls.
Okay.
It was the best show. I still sometimes watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
It was the first really great reality TV show.
Was this on MTV?
It was on MTV.
Okay.
It was really great. It was eons ago. Anyway,
yes.
It was the, she had the show, and the first episode is her and her girlfriend in their house in the Hamptons.
Mm.
So I'm watching this as a 10 or 11 year old kid or something. Maybe it could have been that long ago. Yeah, I was a young girl watching this, and I remember thinking, these houses, these people, the delta between where I was in Philadelphia growing up the way that I did to this Hampton lifestyle just sounded crazy. It might as well have been Mars.
Yeah.
The delta between where I was. So I loved that show, and it was such a fantasy in their life and how they traveled and where they went, and this Hamptons lifestyle seemed so unattainable and so out there.
Yeah.
So I was invited by a girlfriend to go to the Hamptons to stay at one of her friend's homes.
Okay.
And I was like, what do you mean stay at this guy's house?
Yeah.
Like, who had, like, what do you mean? Like, under what, like, pretenses?
Yeah.
Like, this sounds weird. What do you mean? Some stranger is inviting me to their house?
Right. Like, is he expecting something? Like, what is it?
Yeah, yeah. This is weird. I don't know people that do that. People don't just say, like, come to my house and stay over for the weekend.
Right.
There's, like, some creepiness. So, I was like, is it a promoter situation? Is it some sort of, like, it just skeeved me up.
Uh-huh.
So I said no.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend's like, no, it's amazing. This guy's awesome. His name's David. You're going to love him. And I'm like, no. The idea of going to the Hamptons in my clothes, being myself, and, you know, people were asking questions like, oh, where do your parents summer?
Oh,
and
God.
I'm like, the Jersey Shore camp.
Right.
I did not want to get into those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to realize where I had just gotten to New York, so the last thing I wanted to do was be reminded about where I came from.
Right.
And I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to explain it. I just wanted to be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she convinced me to go, and I said, under one condition, I can drive myself.
Okay.
She's like, yeah, take your car. So I drive there, and I arrive, and the gate opens to this house, and instantly I'm thinking, like, come on, this guy's going through a midlife crisis. Like, there was, like, cars galore. This house was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like, what? This is weird.
Yeah.
So I investigate, and I hear that this guy is, you know, recently got out of a breakup, and
mm-hmm.
he was dating this Swiss model, and
okay.
this is why he's, you know, I guess out on the prowl or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, we arrived to the house, and it is on Friday night, and David is Jewish, and I'm Jewish now
mm-hmm.
as well, but
yeah.
we were arriving during Shabbat dinner.
Yeah.
So I arrive, and everybody's sitting at this long table. It's probably a 20-person table.
Yeah.
And there are two seats in the top of the table that are set for me and my girlfriend, Lay.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh my God, that is so sweet. He likes same seats for us. So we sit there, and I meet this guy, and his name's David, and he's got these beautiful blue eyes.
Yeah.
Mid-40s, and just like an average looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit down next to him, and I start talking, and very intriguing conversation,
mm-hmm.
but I noticed that as my intriguing conversation developed, I was kind of showing him 50 Shades of Tina Marie.
Mm.
So I was like being the sweet one, then I was being the sassy one, then I was being the sexual one, then I was being like the political one. I was like being all of these different shades.
You probably were like a little intimidated, and I think maybe even being in a space like that, because you got all these like thoughts going through your head, and you probably were like, I don't even know how to like act right now.
Oh, totally. And
yeah.
He is the kind of person that is such a great listener that he'll just let you go. So I was just trying to get any type of reaction.
Yeah.
So he was crickets over here. So I was just saying anything.
Yeah.
I was like throwing anything out there.
Yeah.
And I just remember him like batting his eyelashes at me, and I walked away from that whole thing being like, what is up with that guy?
Yeah.
He's so interesting. Why?
Yeah.
Like, I work on everyone. At least I either piss them off or I make them love me or
okay.
I do something. There's no like in between.
Yeah.
There's no like, oh yeah, she's a nice girl. There's a noticeable, tangible reaction to me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get a read on this guy.
That's so funny.
So I was like, I'm gonna figure this out. Anyway, I spent the weekend. We had a great time. Became friends. Really serious friends. Like, I loved him so dearly. I just thought he was so smart and so charming. He was dating a bunch of other people. I was so protective of who he was dating.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure it was the right girl because he was such a quality guy.
Yeah.
I was dating another man for 7 years while we were...
7 years?
Yes, from 18 to 24.
Oh my God!
Yep. So I was dating this guy, and but stayed friends. And then when my ex and I broke up, I started dating a bunch of other people, and David was around, and he was like, hey, why don't we go on a date, whatever, and I'm like, no, yeah. There is no way. Like, you're, like, my safety, like, special guy that, like, I always had these visions, if somehow I got arrested in a foreign country, he would land a helicopter to come and get me. Like, yeah. He was my, like, savior. He yeah. was my best friend.
So he wanted always. To pursue you?
Oh, always.
Okay.
He just never did, yeah. thankfully. And he always talks about that. He always says, anybody can say how they're going to act when they're being pursued or, you know, mm-hmm. or anybody could say they're not going to cheat. But when you know hands down that somebody is not going to cheat, it's different when you know it.
Because yeah.
he tried to kiss me once.
Yeah.
After a wild night of drinking. And I was like, ew, no.
Yeah.
He said my face was just like sheer terror.
Yeah.
And so he knew what kind of girl I was. And mm. I think that that just added a different level of respect and trust going forward okay. in our relationship, because he knew what kind of girl I was. And he, since then, apologized like a week after he tried to kiss me. He's like, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Awkward friendship. Mm. Boundaries. Anyway, fast forward. We start dating.
How long you were you guys friends for?
We were friends for 4 years before we started dating.
Wow.
Yeah. But he was always the guy that I was like, he is just, he was a great resource. He was smart.
Yeah.
He was somebody you could bounce ideas off of. Mm-hmm. He's somebody that would like laugh at your jokes. Like, do you really want to compromise that by dating him?
Right.
Because I remember it could have gone two ways. And we went on a vacation that kind of solidified our relationship. But I remember thinking it could go either the way that I think it could be, and he could be the one, mm-hmm. or it could go the opposite way, and then you not only lose your best friend, but you also, like, this is going to taint whatever it is that you do have.
Yeah.
So are you willing to bet on?
It's a risk.
Take a chance.
Yeah.
And I took the chance that it worked out, and I was so glad that we were both in that place to be able to take that chance, because he never lived with anyone before me. He was never married. He was never engaged. He never had kids.
Wow.
He never lived with another woman.
So that was pretty special. And I must feel, because, yes. I mean, if he was doing it with you, that means it meant something.
Yeah. So I asked him when we first moved in together, I was like, well, why have you never lived with anyone?
Yeah.
And he goes, because I was never certain they weren't going to move out. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to move someone in if I thought they were going to move out.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I'm staying? So, yeah, it was, all of those things were so special and so new for him. Mm-hmm. I think, and maybe I could be off here, but I think if we hadn't, and he said this before, it had to be the right arithmetic for him. Mm-hmm. Of person. He tells me he needed somebody 80% good and 20% naughty.
Yeah.
He needs a little, like,
yeah.
the arithmetic for yeah. him. And had he not,
well, he wants a little spice.
Yeah, I mean, he wants a little, yeah. He's like, you need to be able to get along with my friends, you need to have fun, but you still need to be like a good girl. And he's like, I never really found that arithmetic in anyone else. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that was going to be what I was going to end up with. And I was okay if it didn't. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to sound, you know, what is it?
Just say it.
Conceited yeah. in a way. But yeah. I think if it wasn't for me, I don't think he would have. Mm-hmm. I think that we are tailor-made for each other.
Yeah.
I think that we were, like, it's a lock and a key. It was like we were made for each other in that way.
Yeah.
He brings out, like, we're just made for each other in a way.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, you guys, it's kind of an awesome story, and it's kind of cool that you got to be, like, friends for so long before you took that, like, next step.
Yes.
And it was a risk you were willing to take. And, you know, I feel like there might be situations where people are questioning, should I take that risk? I don't want to ruin it. But also, you don't want to look back in your life and wonder, like, I wonder what would have happened if I did.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. I had to dare. And I remember being so scared, because I'm like, I cannot. The value of just his friendship was so dear to me that it was so scary to take that leap. But
yeah.
there was just something inside of me that was like,
no, you feel really funky around this guy. You feel weird, like, you feel so weird mm-hmm. and uncomfortable. This is something.
Yeah.
You have to, like, explore this.
Yeah, for sure. And then also when it comes to just, like, the both of you and kind of how you, like, you know, you parent your children. Like, I read in this one article that, like, you kind of, like, felt a little bit of, like, this resentment, how not even towards him, just in society in general, how, like, a man receives more credit than, like, a woman does. And so
totally.
Talk about, like, what you feel when it comes to that.
Well, I am so thankful because my man is an incredible, incredible father. So I have to preface it by that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I first became a mother,
yeah,
I had already grown this child in my stomach for 9 months. So by the time he arrived, that connection was already there.
Mm.
And I did not realize that I had this expectation that David would love the baby that much instantly upon his arrival.
Mm.
So I was very hypervigilant in watching him connect with the baby. And I'm like, how are you not wanting to, like, stay home from work and watch this baby just, like, coo and bat his eyelashes?
Yeah.
And that was frustrating for me because I was so in love and I was having this, like, full-on love affair with this baby, and he was just off doing his normal stuff. And I regret not giving him the chance to grow into his fatherhood organically without my judgment, because I was on him. I was like, this is terrible. But I remember one night in our bedroom, I said to him, and people ask me if I ever have any regrets, and I'm like, I do have one regret.
Yeah.
One regret was, I said to him, if you think this is parenting, I could do this on my own.
Mm.
And it breaks my heart that I would ever say that to him, because knowing the father that he is now, but
yeah.
I was so scared. It felt like the other shoe dropped.
Mm.
It was like, you're in love. You found this amazing man. You wanted to have children. You have this beautiful life and are so happy, but
yeah.
He's gonna suck as a dad.
It was
like the other, it was like all of those fears I was stirring up about this idea that maybe he's gonna be a bad dad and this is gonna be the flaw that I was waiting for.
You were eating, like, your own fear was, like, getting to you.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And the more I thought about it, the more I was watching him and picking his actions apart.
Yeah.
So fast forward to my second, I learned and I told myself I will give basically no expectations for the first 4 months.
Mm.
No. And I think that I may be even more extreme. I have, like, an excellence seeker in me. I think that dads should be able to do everything for their kids because I have an incredible dad and my brother is an incredible father.
Mm-hmm.
So I think dads should be able to take their kids to school, do all those things.
Yeah.
And I have high expectations. So I think that that was unrealistic so early on.
Yeah.
So managing my expectations with the second was definitely much easier. I didn't have any of those feelings. Whatever he would do with the baby was great. And I just knew that I was with the baby for 4 months. And I was pleasantly surprised on how much he stepped up with the second one, because it was so natural for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time was so, I think, a little awkward for him.
Yeah. For sure. And I think, I mean, and it's so amazing to hear that he's an incredible dad. And but I do agree, though, with what you said, just how society, how maybe women don't get the credit that they always deserve.
So to that point, I just realized how many different things. You're like the CEO of your baby.
Right.
You are figuring out what they're eating, what they're doing, how mm-hmm. long they're going, scheduling all of their appointments, their activities, and it's difficult.
Mm.
So the article that you were speaking about was from Is This Normal with Little Spoon, and they were asking what is this normal, and my question was, is it normal to feel as though resentful when you're doing everything? You're taking them to swim lessons, you're
mm-hmm.
taking them here, you're taking them there, and the one time your husband takes your baby to swim lessons,
yeah,
they're like super dad. Right. They're literally called super dad.
Right.
And I'm like, if that's the gauge for super dad, then I am super mom every single day, 24/7.
Right.
And the like disparity or the delta between what it is to be a good mom versus a super dad or all of that, it's just not proportionate. And I just remember feeling that,
right,
that disconnect, mm-hmm, and that divide. And it wasn't because of my husband, like he was just doing his thing. But I remember being like, that's just so unfair. Like, no one gives you a pat on the back when you do everything you do for your child.
For sure. And obviously, like, a mom and a dad, I mean, like, depending on, like, what your situation is, like, are going to bring different aspects to the table and, you know.
Correct. Absolutely.
And I think that's something we have to keep in mind. However, I do think, though, that, like, moms should be given a bit more credit because it's right now just kind of, like, expected you do all these things.
Absolutely.
And yes, of course, there is an expectation. However, not all moms do that. And so there should be a credit given, you know, credit where credit is due.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are the goals for the future? Like, what is Tina Maurice Clark? Like, what do you want to see happen in, like, the next, like, 5 years?
What would I love to see? I would love to see people adopting the Shiftstar method in their everyday life so they can quickly and swiftly move out of STIRS.
Mm.
And have the emotional freedom to be able to free up the time and space and emotional clutter to be able to do what they actually want to do.
Yeah.
Because that freedom is so, that is decadent. That is luxurious, and you cannot put a dollar amount on that. I will trade any pair of anything in my, take my closet, take anything I've ever owned for that freedom. And you can create that within your mind for nothing. It is a simple shift in perception.
And you have a book, right, that people can buy?
Yes. So yes. It's called the Shiftstar Method. It's a 5S method to shift your perception and get your shit together. And I want people to do that and do the workbook and really get into the conversation and share their STIRS stories and create a community of people owning their awful and sharing what is actually going on.
Amazing. Where can people buy it, by the way?
So on Amazon.
On Amazon. Yeah. Okay. Amazing. And then I always at the end, I like to do like quick, like lifestyle, quick fire questions. So you just kind of tell me, like, we'll just do it quick. So favorite brands, like clothing brands right now.
Favorite clothing brand.
Anything that's like standing out to you?
I love Ronnie Kobo. I think her dress is, I could wear only Ronnie Kobo dresses for the rest of my life.
She just got on Revolve recently. They just did. Yeah,
she's
yeah.
Well, she's a rock star in general. I love her personality, but her dresses are insane. I love, what else do I love? Redone jeans.
Mm.
I think they're just great.
Oh, the
I
best.
I love a great Levi. Those are my two top.
Cool. Okay, beauty products you love right now.
I love anything Clé de Peau.
Okay.
It's like, I don't want to say an old school brand, but it's like more of a...
Listen, if you like it, you like it. If it works, yeah.
It is. Clé de Peau is like my... If you have not used this, I highly recommend. If you have dark circles, use their concealer.
Okay.
It is worth every penny. It is so good. Concealer, Clé de Peau. What else do I like? Cora Organics.
Okay.
I use all of Miranda's products because she's absolutely stunning and everything she makes is so clean and beautiful and makes you just feel amazing. Wander Beauty, their eyelash or their mascara is like,
they heard of them,
fake eyelashes. It's like a row of eyelash extensions. It's incredible. So
amazing.
Their mascara is great.
Favorite restaurant to go to, or like one or two?
Bar Pity and Lore.
Amazing. Okay, good ones. And then I guess, like, what are your favorite ways to work out?
So I am diehard Melissa Wood Health. She's a girlfriend of mine.
Yeah.
She has transformed my body twice.
Wow.
After both pregnancies. So I love, and it's super simple. It's like, I don't have to think about it. I can go to her, do 20 minutes, know I did my thing, not have to wonder, is my body going to be this way? Or did I do enough cardio? Or, oh, did I do enough strength training? I know my body responds to that 20 to 30 minutes.
And you could do it at home.
Doing it at home. Yep. I take it anywhere, especially on vacation. I put it on my iPhone or my iPad or my computer, done, and she always, like, her body's insane, so you're like, yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Long, lean lines. That's her jam.
Amazing. Well, we're going to do a workout now, but thank you so much for coming on. Truly, you are one of the most incredible human beings I've ever met.
Like, you're so sweet.
No, yeah. Truly, like, your story's incredible. It's amazing to see, like, how far you've come from where you started, and I'm excited to see what happens for you in the future, honestly. I think it's pretty bright. But thanks for coming on, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Thank you.